Welcome to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. I'm Drew's co-host, entertainment writer Jim Hill, and he and I are recording this show on Monday, August 26, 2019, the day after this year's D23 Expo wrapped. And Drew, are you okay?
I'm tired. I was fighting off a cold the whole weekend, which was interesting, but I'm here. I am ready to talk about D23, and I think this is going to be very therapeutic for both of us, well, I hope. So,
okay. Ready. Well, now, folks, we're going to save that for the second half of the show, but we have a quick news rundown about what's happened in animation over the past week. And I guess the logical place to start, and again, this is, we've been talking about this, Drew, since the beginning of this year, but we have yet another animated sequel, Angry Birds 2, that, in this case, failed to take flight at the box office. Have you looked at the numbers for this thing, or?
Yes, and they are not great. And what's interesting, too, is that the critics really liked it a lot more than the first one.
Absolutely. I mean, if you go over to Rotten Tomatoes, I want to say this thing had, the first film, when it came out, it had a 46% audience rating and a 44% freshness rating, so you know that's not great. Whereas the sequel got a 74% freshness rating and an 85% audience rating. So you know, again, you'd figure with scores like that, you'd actually do better than the first film, and it's actually the opposite. Before we get started here today, sort of was doing the comparison of the box office that right now, Angry Birds 2 is, I want to say, $27 million total for its domestic run, whereas, the original Angry Birds, 13 days into its domestic run, was $74 million. The sequel has done 35% of the business so far of the original film. And that, to me, is just nuts. Now, I have to ask, given that the first film came out, I want to say, in May of 2016, and here we are with an August release, could that explain it, or?
I don't know. I mean, I think that maybe the box office juggernaut of The Lion King was maybe a little bit, I don't think anybody thought it was going to go this long or do what it does, which is, depending on who you talk to, the most profitable animated movie in Disney history or the most profitable live action movie in Disney history. They can't quite figure out which it is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting. And it's interesting to see that they tried so many different things with Angry Birds too. Like they did that sneak peek for like Target guests one Saturday, and then they bumped up the release date to a really, what was it, on a Tuesday it ended up coming out or something?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Face it, if you look back this year, between How to Train Your Dragon, Hidden World, Secret Life of Pets 2, Lego Movie 2, the second part, we have this sort of, you know, again, that this pattern keeps happening. We have high expectations, basically solid reviews, and then middling, at best, performances at box office. And only Toy Story 4 seems to have bucked that trend.
Yeah.
Though I bet you're hearing the same thing I've been hearing in regard to Toy Story 4, that, you know, the very thing you were just arguing about, you know, Lion King. Lion King came along and sucked a lot of life out of the box office. And there's a number of people who believe any other summer, Toy Story 4 would have done, you know, I mean, look, it made over $1 billion worldwide. Nobody's complaining. But I guess at Disney, they did expect it to be like $1.2 billion or $1.3 billion. And so this is kind of a surprise.
Yeah. Can I use this public platform to appeal to the listeners to try to find me that Duke Kaboom, Jim? I mean, I think it's in stores now. If anyone's at a Target and sees a Duke Kaboom signature collection, please get it for me. Let me know. I will pay you the price of the toy plus shipping, but I cannot find this thing anywhere. And while I was at D23, I got a notice that it was back in stock. I went on the Target. Really? I went on the Target app. It was already gone. So if anyone finds it, that's my plea to the listeners of Fine Tuning.
Again, you want to help poor Drew here, and I actually thought I found it
yeah.
at our local Target, but it turns out you're looking specifically for the movie replica, right?
Yes, it's called the Signature Collection. I think it's $69.99. It's the same size. It's a huge box. I saw a video of somebody online who found it. But, yeah, if you can find it, I would love you forever. So that's my plea out there. Okay. Yes,
It's all those Canadians, Drew.
Yes, yes.
So when you have your superhero stuntman, you got to have it. So,
yeah.
Speaking of superheroes, I know you were busy last week with the getting ready for the expo and all that. But did you see this announcement about Agent King?
Yes, it sounds really cool. It's weird that it's sort of like an official like Elvis property.
And the weird thing is, supposedly what set this whole thing in motion, Drew, have you ever seen the photo of Elvis in the Oval Office with Richard Nixon?
Of course.
Okay. For those of you who don't know this story, in fact, I think there's actually a movie of this. But basically, I guess it's the week before Christmas, 1970. And Elvis just had, a spectacular comeback. He's touring the country, and he's in Washington, D.C., and he sends a note to the White House, to the effect of, I would love to meet with Mr. Nixon. I'm a huge fan of his. And Nixon, it's December 21st. It's not a whole lot under the schedule. It's like, sure, invite Elvis over to the White House. And they meet, and like I said, there's this wonderful photograph of Elvis and Nixon together. In fact, at one point, this was the most requested image coming out of the official National Archives that I guess you could pay a $4 or $5 fee, and they'd send you a copy of this photo of Elvis and Nixon together. But I guess over the course of the meeting, Elvis, as it turns out, collect police badges. And he wanted Nixon on his behalf to reach out to the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs and get one of those badges. And not only that, I guess he asked Nixon to make him a federal agent at large. And Nixon's like, yeah, we're not doing that. But I guess that's the premise of Agent King, is the notion of, what if Nixon actually had? Well, of course, Elvis, let's do that. Let's make you a secret agent. And that's it going forward. The notion is that now Elvis is this super secret agent, and he's using his, his career as the world's most famous rock star as a cover to travel around the globe and to fight for America. And as you said, this is something that the Elvis Presley estate is behind. In fact, Priscilla Presley, as part of the announcement for this thing, literally, this is a quote from the press release. From the time Elvis was a young boy, he always dreamed of being a superhero, fighting crime and saving the world. Agent King lets him do just that. My creator, Johnny Eddy, and I are so excited to be working with Netflix and Sony Animation on this amazing project and getting the chance to show the world an Elvis they've never seen before. And the other thing, frankly, from my side of the fence, as a longtime fan of Archer, the fact that the gentleman who's writing the show and is going to be the showrunner, Mike Arnold, has been involved with Archer for years now. And it's just sort of like, wow, if that's the look, if that's the style, I cannot wait for this show.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really cool. And it's coming to Netflix. Did we say that? Yeah.
Yep. Yep. But again, as the door opens, the door closes. And now, where do you stand on the whole My Little Pony Friendship and Magic show?
I've never seen it. So I am not a brony, Jim. This might surprise you. Please inform me, because this is a genuine blind spot on my kind of like animation. Well,
I have to admit, I'm more familiar with like the first year and a half of the show. That was when Lauren Faust was involved, and she really got them to roll the dice. Face it, My Little Pony, Hasbro line of toys, and there were some earlier, not exactly great animated series, and she came at it and made the characters a little bit more complex, the adventures a little bit more involving. And as you mentioned, this fandom rose up out of the ground. And, people embraced the show. And it's now run for 9 seasons and, 222 episodes. And we're now finally sort of hitting the end of the road for My Little Pony. In fact, just this past weekend, what was kind of intriguing was that in the Netherlands, there's this subscription streaming service called Videoland. And I guess they ran the final episode of My Little Pony, which is called The Last Problem, early. And of course, there's so many dedicated, crazed fans that it leaked online. And it's just, I don't want to spoil anything. Kind of an interesting choice. They're bringing back Weird Al Yankovic and the character that he voiced, who I swear to God, Drew, is called Cheese Sandwich. But yeah, I mean, talking about Lauren Faust, I mean, it's what's kind of ironic is, if I'm remembering correctly, she left My Little Pony to go work for Sony on Medusa. And we've talked about Medusa before, haven't we? Or
yes, we have.
Okay, that's a project that still breaks my heart. Lauren had came up with such a wonderful take on, that Greek myth, and in fact, and managed to turn it into this amazing female empowerment story. And I can't help but think, especially today, right now, especially in this environment where we're having the Netflix and the Hulus and of the world do animated series and standalone features and that sort of thing, that I wish somebody could, go to Sony and tell them, look, you literally have a hit sitting in a file here. You should dig this out and do this. Well, okay, so it's a two-plea show, folks. Drew is looking for Duke Kaboom, and I want somebody to go dig Medusa out of the files and go make it.
Yes.
Anyway, okay, so Drew mentioned the Bronies, and let's be honest here, Drew, compared to a lot of the folks you were encountering at the Anaheim Convention Center, the Disney super fans. Mm-hmm. The Bronies, minor league, whereas on the other hand, that woman who was walking around dressed as the entire Haunted Mansion with moving Omni movers on her dress.
All right. That was amazing.
So, we'll tell you what, folks, when we get back from this commercial break, Drew is going to tell us all about his experience at this year's D23X.
The Vietnam War. It's over. You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer. Streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, we are back. Before we get to the D23 Expo stuff, a little more housekeeping here. We've talked previously about the Steven Universe movie musical. That's going to be airing on Cartoon Network a week from today. That's Monday, September 2nd.
We will both be watching it and talking about it, I'm sure.
Oh, no doubt, soon. No doubt. I mean, been a big fan of this Rebecca Sugar show since it debuted back in 2013. But wow, 5 seasons and 160 episodes. And Alice was telling me that season 6 is, in fact, in production.
Oh, okay. I thought the movie was the end of it.
I thought so as well. But
yeah.
But I guess, that it's in production, but they're not talking about air dates or anything like that at this point. On the
Here's a Steven. Here's a Steven Universe connection for you, Jim, from D23. I went to this thing called an Aladdin, a musical spectacular, which brought together all these different Aladdins. And the woman who plays Pearl played Jasmine in the first 4 years of the Aladdin, a musical spectacular at the Hyperion Theater.
Are you?
And they found her and she was in Guam with her husband doing a production of Mamma Mia, the touring production of Mamma Mia in Guam. And she came in and sang, I forget which song she sang, but she sang on stage and told her story, and it was amazing.
Holy
and
cow.
Yeah, so there you go. There's my Steven Universe connection to the show.
Wow, how do you get from Jasmine to Pearl, though? Wow.
Yeah, yeah, pretty amazing.
Okay, well, again, you know, so we have five, soon to be six seasons of Steven the Universe. On the other hand, a show I wish had made it to six, but sadly is tapping out at three, is OKKO, Let's Be Heroes, and you know, that Ian Jones Quarterly show. I'm not ready to leave Lakewood Plaza yet. I really enjoy Jim Cummings as Lord Boxman. In fact, speaking of D23, did you get to see the voice panel or
no, Jim? You are overestimating my abilities to divide and conquer. No, I really didn't see that many other panels besides some of the big ones. But yeah, there were a ton of great panels that I wish I could have. You got to know your limit, especially because I was sick. So
my energy
levels were a lot. They were depleted.
I get that. What's particularly interesting about those first couple of years of the D23 Expo is that the Disney fans would get so mad because they'd be in line. And, you know, I'm sorry, the hall is full. And it's like, what do you mean I can't get in? And it's like, you know, are you familiar with Comic-Con at all? You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know.
The, yeah. When well, the there hall... were people outside, like, sleeping and all this stuff this year, so, yeah.
Okay. Well, all right, why don't we just get to it then? Oh, before we go, again, OKKO season finale airing next week on September 6th. But, okay, so do we start in the obvious spot, which is the first Disney feature coming down the line, Frozen 2?
Yeah, we could do that. Sure, that was the big finale for the studio panel on Saturday.
Okay.
Saturday morning? Yeah, Saturday morning.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was really interesting. First of all, sort of like top-level view, it was really interesting to see Pete and Jennifer kind of take the reins of their respective studios, especially because they both had movies that they had written and directed that are coming out. Yeah, they actually previewed the next year's movie first, which was a complete surprise. I mean, not to us necessarily, but to others, and that looked really good. And then, yeah, so they had the whole cast out. They sang a new song. We saw another song, the kind of like Let It Be type number from this movie called, I think it's called Into the Unknown. And yeah, it looked good. The Disney animation panel was a little bit of a step down from the Pixar animation panel, part of the panel, because the Pixar stuff was so crazy and like out there. And then by comparison, the animation studio stuff was a little bit more traditional, which is totally fine, but it just felt a little wobbly. I don't know if the pacing of that panel kind of worked completely, because like the Star Wars thing was at the beginning, and it was like, oh, okay, that felt like it should have been at the end. I'm sure you saw the footage that they put out online today.
Yeah,
right?
Friends would talk about the fact that, you know, the Fox stuff got maybe a cursory mention. I mean,
so that was interesting. And actually, I meant to talk about this. So at the beginning of the panel, they showed kind of a sizzle, and they included Ford versus Ferrari, which is a Fox movie coming out, I think, in September, and the Blue Sky Studios movie, Spies in Disguise. And then right off the bat, they showed all the different segments of the company, and Fox Searchlight and Blue Sky were on there, which I took as a very heartening sign for Blue Sky. I mean, to have it up there, to have it acknowledged in front of everybody. And then Alan Horn says, well, we're not really ready to talk about those movies yet. And it's like, what? Like, you have a lot of Fox movies coming out before the end of the year, including Ready or Not, which was in theaters that same weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So that was strange, but I wanted to tell you about the Blue Sky thing because I think that's pretty pertinent. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was no actual footage or discussion of it in the presentation itself, which was interesting.
Now, I have to ask, given that the studio presentation ran like a half hour over, right? Could this have just been...
Correct.
We just don't have enough time, or...
Well, you remember the days when animation had its own panel.
No, that's exactly...
That panel ran about 2.5 or 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the live action one ran 2.5 and 3 hours. So for it, the whole thing to come in at 2.5 hours was pretty, it was pretty svelte by D23 standards. But yeah, it was a long time in that theater. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
but we saw 16 minutes or something from Onward, you know. So we saw a fair amount of footage for sure.
Okay. Now, just a couple of things here that Chris Buck, as part of the Frozen presentation, basically said that Frozen 1, the original Frozen and Frozen 2 are going to come together to tell one complete story, and Frozen 2 starts in the past. Now, you got to see what? Basically two musical numbers into... Well,
One musical number, they sang one musical number, and then they showed a clip of Evan Rachel Wood, who plays the mother, their mother, in a flashback for one scene, I guess.
Okay.
And then another part of a scene with the Sterling K. Brown character, who plays the leader of a regiment that gets lost in these kind of haunted woods. So, you know what I was thinking, Jim? From my seat, I said, how does Olaf's Frozen Adventure fit in all this? You know what I'm saying? I'm saying, where is that? Where is that in the mythology?
Oh, dear. Okay. I imagine you'll be having a chat with Mr. Buck and Ms. Lee shortly. Perhaps you could...
I will. Justice for Olaf. That's what I say. But this was the second day. We had the Disney Plus panel the day before, which I'm sure we'll talk about, and a lot of interesting things there. But, Pixar showed Onward. Like I said, a lot of Onward. Maybe it wasn't 60 minutes. Maybe it was closer to 10. But, and then the first stuff about Soul, you know, which is, you know.
Well, now, just to stop for a bit on Onward here again. So that's our March 6th. 2020 release.
Yes.
And the weird thing is, at least from the outside, you know, that really got thrown into eclipse by Tom Holland's comments about the whole Spider-Man thing that broke out last week.
And yeah.
How old is this kid? You know, he's early 20s.
Yeah.
And again, everyone sort of complimented it on you know, how he handled a crazy difficult situation. But I have to ask, having been in the room while they ran this footage from Onward, what was the reaction? What was the take?
I think people were excited about it. I'm not sure the scene they showed was super evocative of what the movie is, because they've been selling this. And you'll remember it was announced at the last D23. The untitled Pixar suburban fantasy movie.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that great moment where Dan Scanlon played that audio clip of his father. What a beautiful moment that was. And the scene they showed kind of sets up the movie with the two elfin brothers kind of fighting and pulling this spell out. But it really did show the kind of like fantasy suburban angle that they seem to be really pushing and is what, supposedly sets this movie apart from sort of other fantasy films. So I thought the footage looked beautiful. I think it played pretty well, but I think that maybe it wasn't the best choice of footage. I mean, maybe that was the only stuff that was finished. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's always a challenge.
Yeah, but I know that the long lead day for this movie is, like, very soon. So they are definitely conscious that there is a need to build buzz and a need to sustain that buzz until next spring. So,
well, you know, and it's funny you mentioned that, because one of the images I kept seeing off of the floor was people taking pictures of the van.
Yeah.
Were they allowing people to get in the van?
You couldn't get in the van. I think the employees could get in the van, but the van was really cool. You know who did it, who created that van, was our buddy Jay Ward from the Cars franchise.
Oh, yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, so he made that van, which is pretty neat. Yeah, and then they had like a Elsa meet and greet with the big kind of druid ruins from the movie. So the animation pavilion, there was always something happening at the animation pavilion this year, let me tell you. I mean, the Imagineering was pretty sleepy compared to what animation was doing. So
Wow.
Posters from Epcot. Okay, all right. So yeah, but I think that Soul was definitely the big kind of draw. Well,
all right, you bring it up, so let's talk about this. In fact, I mean this in the kindest possible way, but face it, Pete Docter's last film for Pixar, you know, June of 2015, was Inside Out. And again, we go inside the brain and see the emotions at work. And I can't help but look at this one and, you know, and again, it's always dangerous when you've got just a couple of pieces of information, a couple of people's concept art, and to think you really know what you're looking at for a movie. But it really does sort of look like, I would, not a continuation, but maybe a companion piece for Inside Out. I mean,
yeah,
you know, what's your take from having been in the hall and them talking about it?
Well, I think people in the hall, actually, somebody came up to me and I said, man, doesn't Soul look great? And they said, well, it looks like just Inside Out Part 2. But I think that it's something more than that. I think it's sort of more about what sort of drives you artistically. I mean, it looks crazy. It was very funny. Pete's delivery, too, was great. At the beginning of the presentation, he said, you know, we wanted to, you know, understand what makes us human and what goes into who we become and all these kind of metaphysical questions about life and death and who would make an animated movie about this. We're calling it Soul. And that was like a really great kind of intro to this because it looks, I mean, as weird as Inside Out was, this looks considerably stranger. It looks sort of cosmic and Kubrickian in all of these amazing ways, and the cast, you saw the cast, Jamie Foxx leads the cast, Tina Fey's in it, who I saw at DCA the night before with a plaid, and you saw who was doing the music, right?
Yeah, Trent Reznor.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah,
I mean, there were audible gasps when they announced that in the hall, and Pete had to go, yeah, pretty neat, it's out there doing a Pixar movie, so
okay.
Yeah.
Now, all right, forgive me for bringing this up, but I'm a little concerned about the batting order here. I mean, face it, Soul is coming out on June 19th of 2020, and we've got Onward coming out on March 6th, all right? And before we did the show today, I actually opened the calendar and you know, pulled out all my fingers and toes, and there's just 105 days between when the first Pixar film, Onward, hits theaters, and then we get Pixar film number two, Soul.
Right.
And the last time we had two Pixar films come out, in fact, it's kind of ironic because the first film to come out that year was Inside Out, again, June 19th, and then we got The Good Dinosaur in November of that year, and there were 160 days that separated these two films. And I think, you know, you know that you talk to the same people that I do, that there were some concerns about maybe one film cannibalized the audience for the other film.
Correct.
Just the fact that these two are coming so close, right on top of one another, basically. In fact, if I'm counting correctly, the Onward Blu-ray DVD will be arriving, hitting store shelves basically the same time that Soul is opening in theaters. And I don't know if that's the smartest release thing, especially for, you know, when you talk about a Kubrickian, you know, I mean, again,
two original movies for the first time. Onward is the first original Pixar movie since November 2017 with Coco.
Holy cow.
So, okay. You know, that's huge. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting you know, game. But it looks like that both of the movies are great. So at least there's that.
The it's Pixar.
Yeah.
And to be completely honest here, I'm one of five people on the planet who really likes The Good Dinosaur.
Wow. Like, we found them.
Well, no. It always kind of bothers me when people say that the Pixar are dead. And it's like, when anybody talks like that, I know they didn't actually see the movie. Right. Yes, it
That's
didn't
true.
Do the most at the box office, but it's still an entertaining, moving film. And I like it when animators succeed or work on projects that succeed. And it just concerns me when I see two projects, literally, coming in the same window and just understanding that, there's only so much money in the American wallet. And,
Right.
All right.
Well, the other Pixar thing, you don't have anything from Disney Plus in these notes. I just am
realizing. Well,
at the Disney Plus show, they showed the very first episode of Forky Asks a Question, which, let me tell you, Jim, was hilarious.
Okay.
Yes, this is the new short form Pixar animated series that'll be directed by Bob Peterson, which he's a legend. At Pixar.
Yep.
Original director of the Dinosaur.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
And it's basically this one was Forky asking, what is money? And so, of course, Ham has to chime in, and it's really funny. I know that you haven't even seen Toy Story 4 yet, but it's coming out on Blu-ray in October, so hopefully you'll get around to it.
We remain ever hopeful.
Okay, yes, every single Pixar movie will be on Disney Plus at launch, so.
That is amazing.
There's that.
What they did, as part of the Disney Plus thing, the Monsters, Inc. spinoff series, they laid out the premise. Is that correct?
Yes, and did you notice it's a very different premise than the one that they had announced a few months ago?
Now, am I correct? Alice was telling me that what the setup was, that you have the magnum cum laude, from the Monsters University, the top scarer in the class arrives at Monsters, Inc. the day they switch over to laughter, right?
Yeah, I think somebody else told me it takes place within, the first week, that they switch over. But, yeah, that's the premise. Mm-hmm. And I guess the other version just wasn't working quite as well. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's a great premise. I mean, they had a whole panel dedicated to Monsters University over at the Disney Plus stage.
Oh.
But I did not get to go. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it sounds really charming and fun. And I can't wait to see it. But the Forky thing was pretty great.
Oh, no, that's great to hear.
Yes.
But I guess that's the other thing that just both, excites and concerns me about, face it, on November 12th, we stepped through a doorway where, there's Disney content coming at you, whether it's released theatrically or it's a streaming service, that they're shooting for a consistency in quality. That's supposed to be the hallmark of all of Disney's efforts here. But at the same time, it's this whole notion of, what gets the theatrical release or for that matter, is Disney Plus actually the equivalent of the farm team? Is this where you develop talent, which then gets the shot to move, up to do theatrical shorts or for that matter, theatrical, features?
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see if they debut a Disney animated film on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they've got to at some point. It was really interesting.
Well, look, you and I are a big fan of how Disney and Pixar, talent, that starts, in one arm of the company, then gets promoted and moved up and gets their shot. And in fact, that brings us now to Raya and the Last Dragon. Because face it, you and I have been fans of what Paul Briggs has done, for story forever. I mean, he's just this wonderfully funny guy.
And Dean Willems.
Yes,
another genius story guy who was very close to getting an animated movie about kind of like space races off the ground. Do you remember that from a few years ago?
Oh, God,
yeah. So it's great that they're here and they're doing something different, and it looks very cool. It looks very cool.
I have to admit, I was just kind of startled that, face it, this thing, and we are, 14, 15 months out from release of this thing. And the dome of silence that's been over Rhea and the Last Dragon, the fact that they were able to, you know, announce the project, you know, and it made the splash that it did because, frankly, nobody knew about it.
Right.
But what was the reaction in the room? I mean, it's a very different art style, isn't it? Or...
Yeah, well, not really. I mean, it's pretty classically Disney, but they showed this great scene of Rhea looking for the dragon in this kind of water temple, because the dragon is kind of a water sprite. Mm-hmm. It's not really, it's not a Game of Thrones dragon or a How to Train Your Dragon dragon. It's a very Asian kind of snake-like, you know. I think there is an image out that we can put on Twitter, but... Yeah, it was very atmospheric. It felt like a, you know, real serious kind of Hong Kong action movie. And Rhea, you know, it's not the first Asian Disney princess, because Mulan's there.
No.
But, you know, a new generation of Asian princess and beautiful art style. I mean, there's some really heavy hitters on this movie. Nessa Bobe is on it and a bunch of other... animators who you and I love have been working on this thing, as you said, in secret for about the last couple years. But it sort of reminded me of the Avatar: The Last Airbender in a way. Mm-hmm. The emphasis on action,
the
kind of like different creatures, because they show this like kind of bear, like millipede looking creature, which looks really cute. And so, I'm very interested in Rhea and the Last Dragon. I can't wait. I mean, did I sing? Do you remember the movie from the 80s, Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon, Jim? Because yes, I kind of had that theme song stuck in my head a little bit. But you know, besides
okay. I just kind of feel bad for Ozna, you know, the producer of this thing, because when they describe the setting of the movie, so we have a lush jungle glistening with sheets of rain and a clinging mist. It's like, oh dear Lord, from how you have to spend your effects budget point of view.
Right. I mean, at least she's a pro now.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I remember talking with her because she was the producer of Moana. And it's like, when you think about how much of Moana is about water, or for that matter, you know, how to figure out how to stage, you know, emotionally effective scenes when, you know, how much of that movie is literally two characters standing in a raft in the middle of the ocean.
Right.
And, you know, just figuring out how to do that. So to go from that to... you know, misty jungles with sheets of rain coming down. It's like, you know, she's going to start drinking heavily very soon.
Well, it looks like Moana is now officially a classic, if the park's presentation is any indication of how the rest of the company feels about it, you know?
Yeah. And what's fascinating to me is that here's Bob Chapek, who, you know, if it's a $1 billion property, you know, you get a theme park, you know, or you get a land. I mean, in fact, you probably saw when you toured the Imagination Pavilion or the Imagineering Pavilion, the City of Zootopia stuff that they had over Shanghai. But yeah, the fact that Moana is getting the Epcot Trail to the Sea water thing that they were going to do.
And it looks like she's part of Harmonious, which is the new fireworks spectacular, as well as the controversial redo of Spaceship Earth. It looks like she's in there somewhere. So, yeah, I mean, she's all over the place.
Well, okay. Now, stepping away from, you know, the studios panel and Pixar and what Disney showcased there, or likewise, you know, what you saw, you know, at the Disney Plus presentation. So again, walking the hall and seeing what's going on with Disney Animation, what kind of jumped out at you there?
Well, you know, I just wish I could have done more panels. I mean, there was like a whole panel with Amphibia and Big City Greens that was hosted by Kermit. Did you see that?
Yeah.
I wish I could have done that. And I don't know. There was so much stuff, but... I mean, I guess this is just the thing that's most fresh in my head, but it there's just so much parks material based on the animated classics that I worry and wonder if they're kind of stepping over each other in a way that maybe will feel a little bit homogenized, just because they're basic. Because, you know, there's 56 or 57 movies, but they only really pull from about 20 of them, so... You know, I would just love to see more stuff from there. But the other thing was that they showed the exterior of the Mickey and Minnie Runaway Railway for California. Did you see that?
Yeah, the El Capitan.
Yeah, the El Capitan theater. Yeah, which I thought was really cool and so wonderfully Toontown. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot. I mean, I really wonder what the animation stuff on Disney Plus is going to be like. That's a big question. We saw the Lady and the Tramp trailer, which they released immediately, which I was pretty impressed by. And we saw the trailer for the live action Mulan during the studio presentation, which was really cool. It was really cool. And there was actually speculation that they were going to announce a sequel to Aladdin during the panel. But that didn't end up happening, although they did show footage from Maleficent, which looked okay. And the first image of Emma Stone as Cruella. What do you think about that?
To be honest, I kind of looked past her to the Horace and the Jasper, and it's like, okay, they got those. The fact that the release date got pushed back to 2021, right?
Yes, May 2021.
Yeah, and look, some of that, you know, that's not necessarily a cause for alarm. I mean, you know, let's face it, you know, especially in this period where Disney is still trying to figure out where Fox fits in all this, you know, some things are going to get slid further out as they, you know, try to create appropriate space so things can, you know, get the promotion they deserve, get the spotlight they deserve before the next movie comes along. Because I think, as we were saying with you know, Toy Story 4 this summer, that you know, when you have a film that should do, or you expect to do, a certain amount of business, and then, you know, you have another film come along and throw that into eclipse.
Right.
That's tough. You know, that's the thing. I look at a move like that, and you don't move a movie into a May time slot anticipating that it's not going to do the business. If anything, that's sort of an indication, especially now that, hell, you know, according to Disney, and especially, you know, what would happen with Endgame and Infinity Wars, summer now starts, what, the last week of April?
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, the fact that they move, you know, Cruella to, what, late April of 2021, that says, okay, we expect to make some money off of this. But I guess that sort of brings me full circle to, again, the Disney Plus versus Disney theatrical. I mean, when you got to talk with folks from the studio, were you getting the same sort of nervousness? You know, the same sort of, we're not entirely sure, you know, what happens next, or?
In terms of what? In terms of people being siphoned off to Disney Plus, or the other way around?
Well, it's just more to the effect of, you know, the way we consume entertainment is changing seismically. And here's Disney making this enormous bet that, you know, they can reimagine and reposition the company so that there are these two distinct tiers, you know, that you have all, you know, things like, you know, again, not necessarily in the animation ballywick, but, you know, when you saw The Mandalorian, you know, that footage, and, you know, that doesn't look like television, but that's what that is.
Right. Yeah, it felt like, you know, that felt like that the shows that are on Disney Plus that are Star Wars would have been Star Wars stories had Solo performed differently. That was my sort of feeling. But yeah. But they, you know, they announced that Clone Wars is coming back in February. So, you know, you saw that they're actually releasing these shows week to week, which is really interesting.
Yeah. In fact, when you and I talked in the middle of D23, you know, that wasn't that something they just sort of, you know, let slide as part of.
I think Mr. Feige let that one slide. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's different than, you know, face it, the Netflix model of, you know, for example, Shira, here they are, all of them, enjoy.
Right.
That's going to be kind of intriguing to see if they can have their cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
They can. Did that work over at CBS Access? Because I know Star Trek Discovery was doing that.
Yeah, I think it does. I think what's good about that is it kind of keeps the press cycle going. It keeps conversation going. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that was shown during the Disney Plus panel was stuff that I am really excited about, the new Disney Nature movie, Dolphin Reef. There's the they didn't show anything from it, but we both know that, you know, Leslie's Imagineering documentary that's coming, the Ink and Paint documentary that's coming. Mm-hmm. There's a documentary about seeing eye dogs, which I'm very excited about. So yeah, I mean, it really looked like it will sustain, but you're right. It's just like they have so much stuff coming out initially. What is coming out afterwards? And will it get to a point where people would rather stay at home and watch Noelle than go see Maleficent in the theater?
Yeah.
You know, that's really the question.
Yeah. I won't tell you who at Feature Animation, you know, particularly in regard to Frozen 2, but it's like, you know, the comment they made, you couldn't start up Disney Plus December 12th. You had to do it November 12th.
Right.
You know, just sort of like, you know, we don't need an artificial drag on who could potentially be going to the theaters. So, I forget, did you actually spring for Disney Plus?
I did. Jim, you're talking to somebody in the founder circle. Okay. So, wow. You know,
okay.
I've got the pin, I've did it. And best part about it is that I've got a code for you to do the very same thing, Jim. So I will send you a unique code after this is done recording so you can get that super, super low price. It comes out to like less than $4 a month, which is pretty good.
I will see if Nancy will advance my allowance. Wow. Okay. So, all right. So now just to swing back to... you know, face it, you know, we've got, you know, Frozen 2, you know, dropping in, what, less than 3 months, 4 months at this point. If you're a betting man, if you're looking at these four, you know, Frozen 2, Onward, Soul, and Raya and the Last Dragon, what are you thinking? Who's going to come out on top?
Oh, I think Frozen is going to make all the money there is. It looks really solid, a nice follow-up. It doesn't look like the most adventurous story. It looks like there's still not a villain in this one. I think that Bobby and Kristen had commented on the red carpet that Anna's sexuality will not be addressed, and so she will not be getting a love interest. So, I mean, I sort of wish it had taken more risks, maybe, or maybe gone out on a limb, but what they did looks amazing and really beautiful and touching, and I hope that is wonderful. But of course, I'm most excited about Soul. I think that Pete Docter is maybe the greatest animation director of our generation, and looks like he's got another weird one for us, so I'm really excited for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have to admit, I'm torn between Rhea. I love the design of Sisu, the dragon.
So cool.
But you know, again, on the other hand, you know, Onward just seems to have so many bizarre left-handed charms. Mm-hmm. You know, but like I said, you know, you said earlier, you know, to choose, what was it, 8 minutes or 16 minutes?
Maybe it was 8 minutes. I thought it was 16, and maybe that's what someone said, it felt like it was 16, but it was actually 8. Yeah, but it was great. I mean,
okay.
Yeah. So. Did you see the poster that sort of looks like Barley's jacket, his vest? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really cute.
You know, and I would imagine the Disney people pin people were very happy.
Oh, yes. They were handing out pins of the van, Guinevere. So if you were lucky enough to go by the Pixar booth, you got a pin.
Ah, jeez.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So I have to ask, you know, while you were in the hall there, you know, surrounded by all of these film fans, you had to have some people coming up talking to you, you know, about Mission Impossible.
No one talked to me about Mission Impossible, Jim. And I, you know, it was kind of like a vacation from Mission Impossible. I was at lunch last week on Riverside Drive and getting lunch with some fine folks from Warner Brothers. And this kid yells, "Hey, do you do a podcast?" And I said, "Yes." I thought he was talking about, like, you know, fine tuning, obviously, but he goes, "Light the fuse," and he somehow recognized me from, I don't know, just jabbering, I guess, at lunch. He recognized me from Light the Fuse. So
that's great.
Pretty funny.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking of you this weekend, Nancy and I, when we weren't streaming the various presentations they were doing for D23. I want to say it was TBS, and TBS One were showing Mission Impossible and Mission Impossible 2 back to back.
Ah, love that.
You know, and I still to this day, if you held a gun to my head, I don't know as I could explain the story of Mission Impossible 1.
Oh, I'll tell you about it. But you'll love this, actually. This plays into animation, but we just talked to this guy who worked at ILM. It was his first job out of CalArts. He was 22, 21, and his first job was working on the first Mission Impossible. So we got all these great stories, you know, about how, John Knoll hand animated the knife that comes down in the Langley sequence. He did that on his personal computer, frame by frame.
Really?
Yeah, like all this great stuff. So that's in an upcoming episode of Light the Fuse. But we're actually talking to another guy who worked on 3 and 4 from ILM tonight. So we will have it's sort of a nice visual effects centered episodes coming up. So we had our episode with Carly where we talk about the theme park. Stuff, and we'll have part two of that this week. So if you go over there, friend of the podcast, Carly Wiesel,
folks, if you're not already listening to Light the Fuse, you're missing a really entertaining show. On the other hand, my side of the fence, the usual crowd, we've got Disney with Len Testo, we've got a Universal Joint with Dustin Fuse, we've got looking at Lucasfilm coming up. By the way, did you run into Dan at the event at all?
I saw Dan. Every free second he had, he was in Batu. So I saw him sort of in passing in the night. But, you know, he got to meet my wife, Katie. And so that was very nice. And, you know.
That's great. I have to ask, given the photographs I saw of him at the expo, was he that raccoon-like in person? He really looked kind of fried it.
Like he had been eating garbage. Yeah. I mean that's usually how he looks, but
that's not what I meant. But oh dear. Now you got me in trouble with Mr. Z.
See, we have to give each other grief on our respective podcasts. So
Well there we go.
Yeah.
Okay. What else we got? We got Marvelous Disney with the amazing Aaron Adams. We've got I Want That with Shelley Valladolid.
Who I also saw at D23.
Ah, yes. Okay. And of course, we have the podcast that we do here, Fine Tuning. So I tell you what, folks, if you like what you hear with myself and Drew, do us a favor and head over to iTunes and rate and recommend not only Fine Tuning, but Light the Fuse. And if you really, really, really like what you hear here, if you could head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would be very helpful.
And I saw someone who's going on your trip in November. So if you haven't gotten your trip to Jim's Wackadoo Universal, whatever it is, Jamboree, go get a ticket because people are buying them up.
Wackadoo Jamboree. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
We finally have the T-shirt, folks.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'll get Nancy ready.
Maybe if you get in line now for Hagrid's coaster, you can get on it during the event. But,
oh, good. Yeah. Oh, good. So not enough to get me in trouble with Dan. Now we're going to get in trouble with Universal.
Yes, of
lovely,
course.
Lovely. Okay. Well, I feel like Mr. Taylor's work is done here today. So, okay. On behalf of Drew, thank you for listening. And we will be back with another episode of Fine Tuning very soon.